The paper had an article this morning, the title of it was, Are Children Overmedicated? I didn't read the article, and that's what I'm not talking about so much on this tape. But Margot and I, on our morning walk, thought about, we were really maybe under-medicated. There was, and we have no idea, or little idea what kind of medicine we had available to us as children. That was effective, I don't know. You know, sulfa drugs started somewhere in early World War II, like maybe 1942, possibly something like that. And then penicillin and all the mice and stuff all became after that. So before the sulfa drug, which was maybe 42, and I don't think it was even in widespread use then, there was no... there was no medicines like penicillin and myosin this and myosin that. I always thought that my father died from an infection. He had peritonitis as a result of an appendix. He had appendicitis, and I always have thought, and I'm probably right, that he could have been saved had we had any of these wonder drugs that we talk about today. And there were none available then. I don't know what they treated them with. I have no idea. And, of course, it's probable that maybe somebody like Kathy would not be alive except for wonder drugs that she got before we had her tonsils out. I think there's a part of our conversation on our walk today also was that older people now, I think, are more physically fit. There's more vitamin taking and more preventive medicine and more an awareness about exercise. And I think I said in our walk today that her mother, and mine for that matter, I don't think they could have kept up with us. I mean, we can walk fast. We can set up a dazzling pace and do it for over an hour. And I think they didn't do that years ago. I think they could walk. I think my parents were probably big walkers, but I don't know that they walked fast and, everything was very leisurely. They certainly never exercised in any sense that that just wasn't part of their lexicon to do any kind of exercise. And here, to make reference to what I was talking about earlier, here Margot is down at age 67, I guess, pumping iron like Arnold Schwarzenegger. This is really a change. In the dreadful tenement we lived in Wilkinson Avenue in Jersey City, at one time our next door neighbor was a couple, I guess. I'm not really sure what the family composition was. I think there was a young woman and her husband, a young guy, and I think they had some other, at least one other adult, an older grandmother or something. And I don't know what they were, but they weren't like Irish locals. They were like, I think, some kind of rednecks. Whether he worked or not, I had no idea. Not that they were that much better off than we were. We were like rednecks, except we listened to the opera on Saturday afternoon. But I remember, I don't know how many times, but I think a couple of three times anyway, the woman next door baked things like cakes, and she would bring my mother some cake. I don't know how much cake, I don't remember, whether it was a quarter of the cake or what, this layer cake. And oh, my mother would say, oh God, thank you very much, this is great, thank you for the cake, we'll just love this cake. And as soon as we got the cake, my mother threw it out. She said, we're not eating, oh, they're so dirty, we're not. So we had aspirations or something, I don't know what, but we never ate the cake that was given to us. My mother thanked her very much and then promptly threw it out. Well, I have to tell you, even now, I'm a little suspicious, if that's the right word. That may be too strong a word, but people give me food. And someone did rather recently give me some food. Oh, I said, oh, thank you, gee, that's very nice you did that. Now, not like fresh fruit or something like that, but, you know, some kind of cooked food. And I wound up throwing it out. How come? I'm not sure. Bad habits learned as a child, I suppose, something like that. Wilkinson Avenue story. I was an extremely active young kid, you know, bouncing around, lots of energy and all that sort of thing. And I remember once in Wilkinson Avenue, don't ask me exactly why, but like I hoisted myself up on the small kitchen sink in our only bathroom, like maybe to hop up to look in the mirror. I'm not even sure there was a mirror there, but get the idea. I was sort of grabbed it with my hands and I sort of jumped up on the sink to jump up in the air or whatever. The sink broke away from the wall and bent completely down to the floor. The pipe never broke, but I bent, it was really strange. If you'd go in the bathroom, well, that day, that night or whatever it was, you'd go in the bathroom, there would be a sink, there would be this pipe parallel to the floor, and then there was a sink touching the floor, really strange looking. Well, but what does this tell you, guys, boys and girls? Well, it tells you the pipes must have been lead. Iron pipes won't do that. They're just, I mean, if you could break it, if you could do that, you could bust the, you know, break the pipe, fracture it, or aluminum pipes, but lead pipes, it was like a piece of spaghetti. Well, tell me, no wonder I'm so weird. I mean, I grew up with lead pipes. Song, copyright 1996 by Quentin W. Fitzgerald. I know a girl named Emma Rose, curly hair and a big red nose. I asked her what she wanted to eat. She said some sauerkraut and two pig's feet. Emma, Emma, Emma Rose, quit your grinning and eat them toes. We lived in Colorado Springs in, maybe 1956, I think we went there and stayed there, I don't know, till 56 anyway. And then I went to a Korean mogul, sort of moved out of Colorado Springs into a nearby town. But in any case, we were thinking, we were listening to classical music today on our new Bose player with discs, and remarking, you know, how records, everybody used to play hi-fi records, and records, of course, attract dust, and no matter what you did, you'd maybe get a little teeny scratch in there some accidentally, or it'd get some dust on it, and you'd be listening to this, and you'd hear this little tick, 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 or whatever. Now, these discs just seem to be flawless. You don't hear any, you know, it's just the music is just perfectly recorded and more than we can hear. We can't hear the quality of that music. Now, well, in any case, in Colorado Springs, we used to listen to a classical station, apparently run by two brothers, and I guess in their kitchen. And what was funny about the station was they would play a record and, I don't know, then had other things to do, go out and chop wood or something. And the record would end and then you'd hear click, 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 you just keep, and then they would stop after a minute or 2 minutes, maybe 5 minutes, I don't know, but eventually they would pick up the stylus and they'd never say anything. Oh, we screwed up there. They never said a word. They just put on another record and played the next record. But really a kind of homegrown, down-home sort of classical FM station. Now they're also slick and computerized. And Colorado Springs, we drove through Colorado Springs on our Mogo when we went to New Mexico. And it's just the megalopolis. It's just, it looked at size, just this side of Chicago. It's this huge city with endless numbers of exits and whatever. So it's really, really grown from the kind of sweet little, not a village, it was a nice little city, but it's now grown to a colossal size, partly because of the military concentration there, but that's always been there, I guess, or been there a long time, but also because it's such a nice climate and a lot of people move there. It is, incidentally, now the one of the right-wing religious centers of the world. Is in, their headquarters are in Colorado Springs. When I said Margot moved out of town, she moved to a place called Security Village. Can you believe this? What a name. There was no security in Security Village. Footnote number two is we lived there 1956 to 1959, and in 1959 I got a bad case of gonorrhea, and that's how that ended for me, at least. That's, of course, a joke, you know. Soft drinks. Well, first off, my childhood didn't have any what we call now, I guess what they call soft drinks. I think we called them then soda or soda pops. I wasn't raised with them. They, you know, where they weren't in the refrigerator or icebox or whatever. I rarely drank them as a kid. Sometimes I drank them. And Margot's the same way. Margot didn't drink. Margot says she did not drink many soda pops when she was a young person. I know when I lived in Fort Pierce, Florida, the Floridians drank, I think, a lot of pop. I definitely know, I have a memory of a Coca-Cola bottling plant in Fort Pierce, Florida. And the common, one of the big drinks down there was Royal Crown Cola with the oil thing. I want a RC, you know. RC, that was the, one of the big drinks. And we did not have a lot of pop around the house when the girls were growing up. We just didn't buy it much. And as a matter of fact, it's uncommon to find a pop in our refrigerator. Or, yeah, we sometimes buy it often. In fact, when we do buy it is when somebody's visiting, like Emma or Ethan, and we go out and buy some kind of soft drinks. But typically, we don't have them, and typically, I don't drink a half a dozen a year, I don't suppose. I think I do have a memory, though, in Jersey City of being able to buy, if this is believable, you could buy a quart bottle of pop for nickel, 5 cents. It was a off-brand thing, whatever, and God knows what was in it. I suppose water and some sugar and a couple of drops of food coloring or something. It was probably just ghastly, but I really think I remember being able to buy a whole quart of pop for a nickel. But again, pop was not a big thing in my life. I do remember Jingle, and I think the Jingle goes way back to, I don't know, maybe 1941 or maybe even 1940, but I'm uncertain. But I think back that far, and it went something like this. Pepsi Cola is the stinky drink. Pour it down your kitchen sink. Tastes like vinegar, looks like ink. Pepsi Cola is the stinky drink. Now, I have an idea, although it's unscientific, and Margot doesn't even much agree with it, I guess, but I think everyone eats out. There's no question that families eat out more. I never ate out when I was a young person with my family. I don't think there was any money to eat out, for one thing, but it was just not a social practice. Now, young people like Emma and Ethan are eating out all the time with their family. It's just a common occurrence. They don't think twice about it. And I think families go out and eat, and they, let's say they go to a pizza place, and the dad says, oh, well, I think I'll have a pitcher of beer. And he turns to the kids and he says, what do you guys want? And they say, oh, I want a Pepsi or whatever. And I think the idea of, nobody says, well, you should have a glass of milk or something. I don't think so. So I think now there's a naturally occurring consumption of soft drinks. And then when we go visit, like Cindy, she typically has some soft drinks down in the fridge. And you typically come, if you knocked on my door tonight, you would not find any soft drinks. I mean, we don't have them, we don't drink them much. An interesting kind of change in how the world is. I did see a program about a small town in Florida, and way back in the early turn of the century, like 1909, a local banker, for whatever reason, became obsessed with the idea that Coca-Cola was an incredibly good investment. And he went around and he talked to everybody, all the upper class, I guess, people in the community, in a southern, little southern community thing, buy some Coca-Cola stock. And his thesis was really good, and you might listen to it. He said, you know, even when times are hard, people can find a nickel for a soft drink or a Coca-Cola. He said, fine. And they went down to this town and they interviewed a lot of people that are still living there, these old families, and they bought Coca-Cola stock, and I forget the number, but you know, it was something like $10,000 worth of Coca-Cola stock in 1909 is like worth $40 million or some weird, sicky, inconceivable number. But his thesis was right, you know. People buy a soft drink when they maybe shouldn't, and maybe when they would not buy anything else. Footnote number 16. Coca-Cola Company today, in 1997, has become absolutely one of the world-class companies. It's all over. It makes most of its money overseas. It's extremely predatory. It's, you know, they used to talk about the old Standard Oil of New Jersey and how they were these terrible robber barons and the railroads. Well, Coca-Cola right now is one of these, and they'll sort of like burn down your pop plant and that sort of thing, and give pop away and who knows what. Coca-Cola has become absolutely a huge international corporation, which is, by the way, an extremely good stock. And by all accounts, when I read business things, they're quite predatory. Footnote 17. I do remember, though, drinking something when I was a kid that I thought was really like the elixir of life. I didn't drink it much, and I only remember it around Thanksgiving time, and that was apple juice or apple cider. It came in my parents maybe would buy 1 gallon a year of this apple juice, and I just thought that was the greatest stuff to drink. It was just simply apple juice, and I still think it's great, and I always have some in the fridge now. I want to revisit, I think we discussed already, but I want to revisit this whole question of exercise and sports and working out and all that. I did not come from a sports family. My father engaged in no sports. My mother engaged in no sports, as far as I know. My brother is almost, I don't know, probably he might argue, but he's sort of anti-sports. And Paula doesn't do any kind of sports. And she's talked about she doesn't think she's physically, I don't know, able to do sports or whatever. I don't want to be critical or make excuses either way. But I've always been into sports. I was active as a kid in sports. And I think maybe the Army, of course, the Army's all sports, you know. I mean, sports are important, and especially you send a bunch of young men overseas somewhere and you separate them from their families and what have you, and sports is a good, obviously. First, you get physically fit, which the Army's interested in getting everybody in but also burns up a lot of energy and what have you. And I could play like ping pong for like 8 hours, like almost collapse, and play volleyball for hours and hours and so forth. Badminton, I played by the hour, absolutely by the hour. Tennis, I played tennis up to last year, and I haven't played, last year I think was my last tennis year. And I suppose because I don't really have anybody, you know, my skill level or my age to play tennis, so I sort of closed that box up, which is okay. But I think being active and healthy and being active and athletically active and exercising, that kind of thing, is really important. And Margo does too, and we've been walking and walking for years and years and years. There was a report in the paper just a couple of days ago, and it went something like this. They checked, I think, on women, not men, but women, and between the ages of something like 55 and maybe 40, somewhere around there. Not really over women or whatever. And what they found out was they come up with these absolutely startling numbers, and the numbers were something like this. 8% of the women said that they were extremely stressed. Well, Margaret just delivered this thing to me here. Middle-aged women have more aches and pains. Let's see if I can go over this. 8% reported significant difficulty completing simple tasks such as climbing a flight of stairs, carrying groceries from the car, or walking around the block. 20% reported some difficulties with completing such tests. Well, of course, we had an incredible laugh over this, and I think it seems to me, I talked on the tape a little while ago about there's some people couldn't keep up with us on our walk. I just know that. We know a lady lives down the block. I see her out walking now, last few days she's walking. We'd kill her. If she tried to keep up with us, she'd have to be with. And here's Nanny lifting weights and doing aerobics, and she can't get enough. I mean, so she's starting to look like Arnold Schwarzenegger, and I've got a wrong machine and all this, and it's sort of, I think it's incredible how times have changed. I want to make one other point. I think that I see, and I'm sure I'm not the only guy to see this, but I see a sort of split in our world of, and it's in our culture, a split between those who are educated and those who are not, and the ones that are not are not going to do very well, and the ones that are educated are going to do extremely well. And there's some of, there's a group of people, you know, concerned about their weight and what they eat, and then there's a bigger group that's not, and so forth. And the same thing with exercise. I think there's a small group which are way big into exercise, and a large group that are not into exercise. I wonder how much of this is, you know, there's a rule of 80-20, and it's like 20% of the population needs 80% of the pizza and 20% exercise and 80% don't. I don't know how it works, but it really makes you think, and obviously exercise, we think exercise and is a long-term lifetime commitment. Are you listening, Ethan? Emma Rose, are you listening? My friend talked about he was bullied when he was in school, and he's never forgotten it. Here is a guy 60 years old, over 65, and he's still bitter about being bullied. I guess he was a little skinny little guy, and kids bullied him, and he still wants to go back and execute those people that bullied him. But I thought about that because I watched a program on bullying, and bullying, I guess, is a fairly prevalent activity in school. Common, there's been some studies, I watched a program on a Canadian researcher showed that bullying was quite prevalent in Canadian schools and so forth. But in thinking back on my own life, I can only say I don't remember ever being bullied, ever. I can't recall that being bullied. But I also can't recall ever being a bully. I never bullied anybody. I mean, I was just this wonderful child, and I didn't bully anybody, and I don't think I allowed anybody to bully me. So I don't know about this bullying. And I think one of the things about bullying, it involves looking different, being overweight, being the wrong race, wrong economic thing, that kind of, being an isolate in some way, not getting along with the gang and all. Of course, I was an incredible class leader of all the indolent students. One final point, I don't know why school and all this brought up this memory, but this is really true. I was a dirty little kid. It looked, I can sort of even vaguely now remember this. My mother would say, well, go wash your hands, Quentin. And I'd go, well, you know, it'd be supper, and I'd go wash my hands. It looked like I had a gray, kind of a gray-black sweater on. From right at my wrist up, I looked like the coal miner's son or something. I was this dirty, unsanitary kid. I didn't believe much in that kind of stuff. I'd wash my hands if you pick on me and make, oh, go wash your hands when you go with me. You know, I'd do that, but I don't think I was a very sanitary guy. And we, I'll tell you what, when I was a kid, I remember bathing faithfully once a week. That was it, once a week. And I'm not sure that we changed oil more often than that. I mean, I'm not sure, but
no, you didn't.
I think I wore the same underwear for a week. Now, I don't know if that's true. I really don't remember. I wouldn't remember anything like that, but I think so. Margot and I have been walking for a long time as exercise, and in fact we discussed a little bit ago about how long this has been, and we're not quite sure, and we're gonna, and I have some old exercise books or something. I think I can go back and check that out, and I think I will try to get a year, but in any case, years and years ago, so at least some years ago, let's put it that way, we were walking around Ellensburg in the fall of the year, early morning walk, and we walked through a residential area, and we both detected a smell, and the smell was the smell of kerosene. And I never forgot what Margot said, is she said, that's a smell of poor or poverty. That's a poverty smell, you know, a poor smell, the smell of kerosene. And they do sell here in town. They sell, you go down and buy one tomorrow here in Ellensburg. They sell these kerosene heaters. Well, we used those when I was a kid. I remember having kerosene heaters. They stood 2.5 or so feet high. They burned kerosene. They had a circular wick. They stunk like a goat. They had this kerosene smell. And they were of radiant heat. I mean, they burned kerosene, and we bought kerosene at the local hardware store. We had a can, and I don't know what it was, a gallon can or something. My father endlessly worried about this kerosene heater, tipping it over and all this business. I remember he was like a worrywart about, oh, we're gonna, you know, you knock it over and you'd start a fire. And in retrospect, I don't know why he didn't nail the damn thing to the floor. I guess maybe it never occurred to him, like, he was not, I didn't think he was like your basic mechanical guy. But if he worried so much about this, he should have, you know, oh, the kids are gonna knock it over, blah, blah, blah. Why didn't he just nail the damn thing to the floor? It would have been 30 minutes work, and then you could have knocked it over with a truck. But we used that, and they stunk. Actually, there's a kerosene smell, and I suppose that all the kids that went to school in my school, you know, that everybody probably smelled like kerosene, just like Irish kids in the last century or early part of this century smelled like peat smoke, so much so that nobody even knew, you know, that you had this peat smoke smell or this kerosene smoke. But you know what else? That couldn't be healthy. That had to be really gross. To be smelling, you know, to be burning kerosene in your home and everybody breathing this in. We know, for example, that truck drivers get things from diesel, apparently diesel smoke or diesel fumes. So you just say, it's too bad, and nobody knew, and what were you going to do about it? And, I don't know, life goes on, you know. You know, we started this tape business as a way to talk about our early life and our childhood and that kind of thing. It's a sort of interesting historical fact, and Nanny's read books about women going across the plains in covered wagons and that kind of thing, and they're really fun to read. Interesting and insightful, if nothing else, you know. But I have to digress a little bit. In 4 days, Ethan's going to be 16 years old. And his mother's, and she's been really faithful about this, sends us a photograph she has taken. They had this done year after year. We have a collection of them somewhere. And she sent us the latest picture of Ethan, which I faithfully clean a frame. We use the same frame over and over, and we hang it in our bedroom. Anyway, obviously it has nothing to do with us, but we heard this story that, I don't, from her, his mother, I guess. I'm sure he doesn't want to hear this, and maybe he won't hear this till years later from now, but that girls have not been real crazy about him. He doesn't have a lot of dates or whatever, though. I guess he is presently dating a trendily named young girl named Megan. What else? But I have to tell you, this guy is so handsome, and it's a dark, smoky handsomeness. Not brooding, but close to that. And then we know him. He's a silver-tongued son of a bitch. And he's smart, and he's kind, he's sweet. He's a touchy-feely guy.